great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we welcome Jennifer Batten. She has gained worldwide popularity playing with Michael Jackson on many of his biggest world tours. She's also played with Jeff Beck and the Las Vegas show Zumanity. You can also check out her teaching videos on how to play guitar. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by our good friends Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. Here are your hosts, Jeff the Flow to the Izzo, Floro, and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great show tonight. I'm really excited about this. This is going to be a lot of fun. But first off, Scott, I saw you with a double neck Gretsch this on Facebook. So what's going on? You're doing a new video, right?
Yeah, I'm doing the video on the TC Electronic Ditto X2 pedal, which is a really cool little looper pedal. So what I'm doing with that is, well, heck, you know, when you're creating a loop, might as well use a double neck. That's what I say. You know.
But check it out on our Facebook page. The guitar is a pretty unusual guitar. It's a rare Gretsch double neck.
Yeah, it's 6120, so it's an actual hollow body double neck, yeah. Or semi-hollow. But anyways, yeah, but don't be fooled. It's heavy as all hell, but that's all right. A lot of hardware on it, but it's a lot of fun. And then, so I do quite a bit of different things with that. I put together a little video where I show the reverse feature, so I do a little bit of a backwards playing, and then do a half-speed thing, so kind of a little... to show kind of what Les Paul used to do back in the 40s. But you can do all that with their little pedal, which is really, really cool.
That is really cool. Anyway, okay. Otherwise, before we get started, we're going to go to commercial. But I just want to thank Monique Caravello for introducing us to Jennifer and getting us Jennifer on the show. It's really a pleasure. I've followed Jennifer's career for many years, and she's just an amazing guitarist. And she gave me some clips. I cut some clips that we're going to show today. And it's just mind-boggling what she's doing.
Yeah, and before we go, though, I do want to mention, though, when you visit our website, flowguitarenthusiast.com, make sure to stop and sign up for the giveaway that we're doing right now for Pigtronic's Quantum Time Modulator. So
yeah, that's
make
cool
sure you sign
pedal.
Up for that, and so you can win that. And it's signed by the designer and owner of Pigtronic's, Dave Coltai, so it'll be cool.
That should be fun. Okay, well, let's go ahead and go to commercial, and we'll be back with our guest, Jennifer Batten.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound. 1-800-222-4700 or catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Sweetwater is proud to partner with The Flow in bringing you the latest and greatest in all guitar-related things, be it tone, be it artists and musicians, their secrets on their tone, amplification, and live performance. We at Sweetwater are just as passionate as the folks on The Flow in bringing you what we consider to be the best in pro audio equipment and guitar and PA gear. Give us a call and we'll discuss gear whenever you like. Number here is 800-222-4700. And again, you can catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. I'm Aaron Raby, and thanks again for listening.
Hi, I'm Richard Kotze from the Winery Dogs, and you are listening to The Flow Guitar Enthusiast.
I cut together a couple of pieces from one of her songs called Ass Whooping. And this is from her album, Whatever. Please welcome Jennifer Batten. That's some of the most amazing guitar play. I mean, her tone, and it's a long cut. I kind of put it together, but she went through so many different things. I had to show that. Jennifer, welcome to the show. It's an honor to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Let's go right to the beginning. There's so much, because your sound is so unique. I want to get into there's so much to get into, but I'm going to try to start from the beginning. First of all, I'm sure people are curious, and you probably have talked about this before, but how did you get involved with Michael Jackson? How did that happen? And also, too, when you started back then, we want to know what you were using back then and then what you used when you toured with Michael Jackson, equipment-wise.
Okay. Well, I was lucky enough to hear about the auditions. He was auditioning, I heard, 100 players in L.A. for his first solo tour without his brothers in 1987. And I was one of the lucky ones that heard about it, got a call, and went down to play. And I took a few days off to work on his stuff. And when I showed up, there was no band there. It was just me and a video camera, and the only guidance I was given was to play some funky rhythm stuff, because that'd be 90% of what was called for. And then I started soloing and ended with the Beat It solo, because I had been playing that in a cover band for several years, and I thought he might find that useful. He certainly did. In fact, that somebody else in 16 bars bought me a house. It was awesome.
Now, when you were playing before you started with Michael Jackson, what were you using? What was your gear, your basic gear at that time?
Oh, God. Before I joined him, I think I had a crappy little Carvin amp. And pedals, and I was forever buying new pedals. And as soon as I got the gig with him, we were kind of given carte blanche to get whatever we thought we needed for the tour, and we didn't have to pay for it till the end of the tour, which was a silly thing to tell me, because I bought everything. I was influenced by the other guitar player, John Clark, who was on the tour, and he was really into boogie at the time. So I ended up getting two Boogie Mark IIIs that were rack mount. And at that time, one was set for clean, one was set for dirty, and I got a Boogie Strategy 400 power amp to send them through. And this was before multi-effects, so I had single rack spaces for one just for reverb, another just for chorus, and another for delay, and that was pretty much it for effects.
Now, your distorted sound was basically the amp cranked up. You weren't using any distortion device or anything.
Right. Yeah, it was just the amp back then.
Oh, okay. No, and that must have been an amazing. What guitars were you using at that time?
You know, right when I joined him, I ended up using Ibanez. I think they called it the Saber back then. Very, very thin body guitar.
You mentioned it, the Carvin amp. What were you using before that? Did you ever use any Gibsons or Fenders?
Are you talking amplifiers?
Guitars.
My first, I guess I would call it a kind of a professional model guitar was a Gibson Les Paul. Yeah. And I used that for several years, and the weight was just a bit much for me. And then I ended up crossing over to Strats, and I had several Strats before I joined Michael's band and ended up with Ibanez for 7 or 8 years.
Now, when you were touring with Michael, did you have to, did he want you to do those solos from those, you know, from all those songs note for note, or were you pretty much given a lot of freedom in how to approach them?
You know what? He never specifically told me anything. For the Beat It solo, I thought I'd be hard put to do something better than or even on par with what Van Halen did. So I just chose to copy that solo.
Mm-hmm.
There was other ones like Working Day and Night, where it was an infinite amount of time at the end. So I just improvised that, and he would cut it off when he felt like cutting it off.
Okay. Now, after Michael Jackson, you had done some other work. You had done some session work with other people. Did you still basically use that same setup, maybe scaled down, or did you change your equipment?
You know what? It was kind of comical because all that equipment, it doesn't sound like much, but it was the size of a refrigerator. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once I didn't have roadies anymore and I was on my own for a year or so, I cut it down into two different racks and I got a hydraulic lift for my little Datsun truck. And still, it was such a pain in the ass. It was incredible. But yeah, I kept that gear for quite a while. But it, you know, like everybody, it just morphed over the years, and now you can get like 10 times the amount of effects in your iPhone now.
Before you had started, what was your background? Did you study guitar formally? I can't remember I thought you were from Musicians Institute, or you taught there.
I graduated there, the third class ever, when it was only a guitar school, GIT.
Oh, okay. So you had all the – it's interesting because one of the things I remember reading about you back then when you were touring was your knowledge, that you had all the theory and you knew what you're doing. At least you could tell us what we were – a lot of us just played, but at least you knew what you were doing. But did that help a lot, or did it really – or did you have any say in some of the arrangements? Did they change stuff around, or was it pretty strict to the album?
Oh, as far as Michael, it was pretty set. I mean, the only thing that would change from the album, number one, was tempo. Some of those tempos were just breakneck, so much faster than the record.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be extended arrangements for dancing. Mm-hmm. But pretty much that was set by the time I got there. In fact, the tapes we were given when I first started was from the Victory Tour, because those formats were already set for dances.
Mm-hmm.
So we just learned from the tapes back in the cassette days.
I'm going to play another clip because I want to talk about also, too, you had played on a couple of albums for Jeff Beck. This, to me, at least it feels for me, it has a Beck-type sound. It's from your Whatever album again. This is called the Hooligan's Holiday. Let me play this clip for everybody, and we'll talk about that. Hang on a second. Here we go. What were you using on that?
I think at that time I was using a PV5150 amp.
Mm-hmm. And what guitar? Same? Was it that? Because you mentioned on your website that you were using a Variax.
That's very recent. No, I was with Washburn for many years after the Ibanez. So it was actually my model Washburn called the JB100.
Oh, okay. And because one of the things I noticed in listening, you had given me, I'm pulling clips from two of her albums. One of them's called Whatever, and the other one's called Momentum. And one of the things I've noticed, you use the vibrato a lot, and you like to go in between tones, which I think is really kind of cool, because you're really just, you'll bend and you'll just kind of keep going, and you'll just, it's melodic on its own, but still, it's kind of unique because most people just hit it and come back up or something, but you actually use it more musically.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's kind of funny. You know, when grunge came in, all of a sudden the tremolo bar was considered not cool anymore, and I was just appalled. Because I think it's the most expressive tool you could possibly have for guitar because, well, I think probably the most expressive instrument in the world is the voice. And that bridges the gap between guitar and voice to me.
Mm-hmm.
You can slide into notes and slide out of notes. And plus the vibrato that you use from a tremolo bar, if you have a floating bridge, you can go sharp and flat. Mm-hmm. Whereas just a finger vibrato only goes sharp and back to pitch. So it's a much more rounded vibrato.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, the actually, let me just play. I'm going to play a clip called, this is from Momentum, called Zulu Wedding. And it kind of shows that type of bending, and you do a double lead doing that kind of stuff. And the melodic structure, listen to what she's doing melodically, because I think that's the most fascinating thing. But she's using that the whammy bar heavily on this. And besides, you also do some like harmonic tapping, which is kind of interesting. This is Zulu Wedding. Now, I just want to mention the on that album, that bass player is killer. He's just doing some amazing. Who is the guy playing bass on there?
His name is Ricky Walking, and he's living in Dallas now. He was in a couple of different bands that recorded. One was called the Nixons, and another one was called Edgewater. But yeah, he was such a fun guy to play with.
Because he's doing all he compliments a lot what you're doing. He's hitting, you know, tapping harmonics and sliding, and he's doing all sorts of cool stuff, and it kind of complements what you're doing there. Mm. And what I wanted to know was, because you're doing all sorts, again, I think that's a good example of your technique and using the vibrato and using it melodically. What I'd like to know is, like, a lot of the jazzer guys, and I don't classify you as a jazzer, but they listen to a lot of saxophone solos. What I want to know is, where do you get your melodic ideas? What do you listen to? What really get, because your melodies, I was trying to figure out an instrument that actually does what you kind of do. And usually, you, like with jazz players, you can hear the saxophone influence. But I was curious what you listen to, where you get your melodic ideas, if that can be answered.
Well, first I'll say that the bending that you heard in Zulu Wedding is not all whammy bar. A lot of it is whammy pedal.
Oh, okay.
Which it frees up your hands. Mm-hmm. It does. I said it. Almost always with my solo tone, I'll set the whammy pedal to bend down a whole step.
Oh,
and,
okay.
So when I'm in the melody in Zulu Wedding, it's all harmonics. So it just makes it a lot easier to control the open strings from ringing out if my hands are free.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, I use them both. So when it got further on in the melody, I used the tremolo bar, and I honestly can't tell you which was which, but okay. Anyway, Jeff Beck was a huge influence, and at one time I learned all of the solos on his records, Blow by Blow and Wired. And I always tell students there's two solos that I think I learned the most from, and those are the ballads, 'Cause We Ended as Lovers, that's on Blow by Blow, and Goodbye Pork Pie Hat, which is on Wired.
Mm-hmm.
And for one thing, that it's all slow enough that you're not overwhelmed by flurries of notes, but he just tweaks the living snot out of each note, you know?
That's,
you know,
true.
That's the soft. It's one thing to play notes and one thing to make them pop and come alive. And there's so many nuances of what he does with his hands that I learned so much from just getting the most wicked harmonics to the way he would squeeze a bend. So I would say he's probably the heaviest influence for me. Although I did study and learn a lot of solos from everybody, from Joe Pass and Charlie Parker to George Lynch, Steve Morse, you name it. I spent a lot of time on other people as well, but I think Jeff Beck resonated with me more than any of the others.
Yeah, one thing about Beck was he'd do a phrase, and when you thought it was over, he'd just kind of bend into something else, and it kept going. And you kind of do that a little bit too, where you just kind of surprise us, like, okay, she's finishing that. Oh, and wait a minute, where's she going? And you're going into this other area, and it kind of extends a little bit longer. And I think that's kind of fun because it surprises you. It's like, oh wow, there's something else here.
Yeah, I love the unexpected. I mean, that really takes you on a journey. And I think Jeff is doing that even more in the last, 20 years than he ever did before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's just fun.
Yeah. Well, I want to play another clip. This is from Whatever. Just to go, you had mentioned some of the other people that you had studied other. And this shows some other styles that are not normally attributed to you. But I think it's really kind of interesting because what you did here was a really different type of piece. This is on acoustic guitar. It's called Fearless. And this is from the Whatever album. Let's take a listen to this. This is really, really nice. And we'll get into what you did. Amazing. What were you using? Which guitar is that?
Boy, I'm not sure. You know, I just remember I haven't listened to that in quite a while, and I just remember the trauma of checking out a bunch of different guitars, and they sounded okay, except the electronics just weren't cutting it. Mm-hmm. And I might have ended up with I have a Parker acoustic, which is my favorite, that I inherited from my father, one of the thin line Parkers that mm-hmm. they don't make anymore. It's called the Acoustic Bronze.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a killer guitar. It weighs about a pound and one of those things that you could play all day long without getting fatigued.
Mm-hmm. Is that a special tuning?
Yeah, I think it's Dadgad. I'm not positive. It might be a little off from that.
Now, I saw on your, in this, I don't know if this applies to this song, but I saw in your equipment you have on your website, which is, so everybody knows, www.jenniferbatten.com, you have a whole gear page, and you mention a signature string damper. Did you need to use that on that piece? Because those taps that you're doing, I've tried tapping like that, and it's hard to get it clean where you can hear all those notes. And especially you're doing that kind of syncopated thing, which is really cool. And it's just every note just rings true.
Well, I use the damper on all my guitars, but for that particular piece, because there's open strings and harmonics, I didn't use it at all.
Okay.
So whatever's ringing out was controlled with the right hand.
So you have the damper on when you're using electric guitars a lot, or just for specific things?
I keep it pretty much down, damping the strings at the first fret for everything, unless I'm going to be using open strings, and then I'll just flip it out of the way temporarily. But I've just found overall it just keeps things cleaner and more controlled.
Oh, okay. Because that's interesting. You get your sound is really clean. Do you think that's a big part of it, is by damping all those strings? Because every note just rings true.
It certainly helps. And honestly, there's certain players out there that are, you know, big names that I think could use it. Because, you know, you hear strings ring out and I just want to slap them and give them a damper and say, hey, upgrade, dude.
Now, I noticed also, too, on your gear page, you use the Quilter, the little Quilter amp.
Yeah.
Is that a new thing or have you had that for a while?
It is new. I've had it, less than a year. And a friend of mine turned me on to it, and they have an 8, 10, and 12-inch speaker. And it's by the guy that makes QSC power mm-hmm. amps that's
yep.
you know, the standard for PA systems worldwide. So it's solid state, and it's so lightweight. I just, you know, I'm kind of overlifting things at this point. But I'm excited about them because there's a lot of innovations about this amp, and they've also recently come out with a thing called the Tone Block, which is a mm-hmm. 4-pound power amp for guitar
yep.
that is 200 watts. So it's just awesome. I can throw it in my suitcase and have that power anywhere in the world. And I use Digitech processors, so I can send that into that 200-watt power amp and keep up with anybody.
Yeah. Well, that the little amp, too, is 200 watts, Class D. We had Pat Quilter on the show. He brought the amp in, and I was blown away how small it was. It was a really amazing little amp.
Yeah, the Tone Block's even smaller.
Yeah,
I mean, put it on the pedal board.
Yeah, that's just the. But also, too, did you ever try the Steel Air?
No, I haven't.
It's really nice, and it's not that heavy. I mean, it has a 15-inch speaker in there, but we were blown away. I mean, obviously, he made it for pedal steel, but it's got a nice sound to it. If you like that, like a little bit more lower mid to your guitar, it has that sound, but it's really nice. And it's the same thing. It's that Class D amp. But that the little guy that you're using is great because it's so small. But you could put a 4x12 in that thing and it'll scream.
Yeah. You know, I remember one of the first gigs I did with it, there was another guitar player that had a Marshall 412 and they couldn't keep up with me. It was awesome.
Do you do the mixing of the speakers where you use like an 8-inch and the 12-inch together?
I haven't done that. No, I only have the 12.
You should do that.
And a spare cabinet if I want to do stereo too.
I recommend pick up one of the different size speaker cabinets.
Yeah,
I think the one he brought in was an 8-inch.
Yeah,
okay. We brought the 8-inch, and we saw at the LA Amp Show he had the 12-inch speaker hooked up with it. It was amazing. It did change the sound a lot. Though the little 8-inch in a small combo or studio setup was just perfect, but when you put that 12 in, it just was just monstrous, and it actually was pretty loud.
Yeah, and I just love the fact that, and I've had comments from people, you know, it's one thing if you bring that to a rehearsal and people expect a smaller amp, but when you bring it to a show, they think, oh my God, you brought your practice amp? You know, they say that until they hear it. I like to shock people.
No, it works. I mean, but yeah, it's just amazing what he's doing with Class D technology because it's so light and it's got plenty of power to handle anything. And it's, if you don't need it, it's still there just in case. But I mean, it's, they're incredible amps and the tone on them he's really got the tone down really nice. But that's good. Yeah, I saw them, like, I was cracking up because that little guy is a killer little amp. And not too many people yet, I think, know about it, but they're going to catch on. So, but, yeah, that's a great little amp. I'm going to play another clip and I'm not sure you can tell me what you're using on this. I think this sounds to me like there's some synth guitar on there. So I want to talk a little bit about that. You also do some chimey type of effects on there, probably tapped harmonics or something, but this is called Glow and this is from the Momentum album. We'll be right back. I just want to mention everybody, I'm just playing little snippets of these songs. I mean, these songs have they're just amazing things going on in all of them. I'm just giving you a bird's eye view. You really have to check out these albums because she's doing all sorts of really interesting stuff. One of the things I just wanted to comment is that your sense of rhythm, you have a lot of rhythm, a lot of syncopated things going on, which I think is great. And is that Ricky playing bass on there?
Yeah, he played on the whole album, and Glenn Sobel is on drums. He's out with Alice Cooper right now.
Yeah, that's just his bass is just that is incredible. Now, what were you using on there? Which guitar, the clean type of guitar where you're bending the you're doing chime effects and you're bending, what were you using there? Was that the Washburn?
Yeah, it was the Washburn, and there's no guitar synth on there. It's all sounds that came out of probably the Digitech GNX2 or GNX3 at that time.
Oh, okay. Because that when you bend that type of thing,
that's the whammy pedal set to go up an octave, and I step on it a little bit so it doesn't go up an octave. It just goes up less.
Wow, that sounds like a synth portamento. If I didn't know it was a guitar player, I mean that's. When we used to use the Mini Moogs and we would play with the portamento on it, that's how you'd get that sound. But that kind of like stretch on the tone was kind of interesting. So were you using like was that like a synth type of sound on the Digitech or just a straight distortion?
It's a sound that they've had on all of the GNX models and also on the new RP series called Swell. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they kind of screwed it up on this latest model.
It doesn't do it.
But I use it a lot. I love it. It's got a special noise gate on it that works like an automatic volume pedal, so you don't hear the initial attack. It just swells in. And I got a little compression, detuned, and a ping pong delay.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, it's a great sound. But I could have sworn it sounded like a synth. But it's amazing with that whammy pedal does a lot of. I mean, I've heard other things, other people use it, but not quite the way you're using it on this. So it's kind of interesting. Well, let's talk a little bit about your solo career. In terms of guitar playing in your setup and your just whole approach to it. How is it different than what you were doing before? Is it pretty much the same approach that you approached to Beck and Michael? Well, Michael Jackson, you said it was pretty strict. With Beck, was it more open? Did he just pretty much let you do what you wanted, or was he pretty precise what he wanted you to do?
He is a self-professed terrible band leader, and so he had me do it. So he wasn't demanding at all. He's like a singer mixed with a kid that just wants to jump in the sandbox and play. Mm-hmm. He doesn't really want the responsibility of telling people really, you know, detailed instructions. Basically, you know, he's had a, I don't know, 50-year career, and he would choose songs for us to play. Plus, we played a lot of new stuff. And he wants you to be as creative as possible. He wants to get a charge out of what you're writing or what you're playing or whatever sounds you're coming up with. When I joined him, you know, originally the band was going to be Terry Bozzio and Tony Levin. And we met at SIR in New York to play for a couple days. And I was surprised there was no keyboard player. And I thought, well, hell, you know, guitar isn't going to cut it because he's got all these records with the foundation of keyboards. And mm-hmm. So that's when I jumped into doing the guitar synth. So at least half of what I did with him, if not more, was guitar synth. And that was the focus of what I did. So, I just wasn't focused on guitar that mm-hmm. much, you know. It's like, I'll let you do it, Jeff.
What did you end up using for that? What kind of guitar synth setup?
You know, I struggled. I started out with a company called Axon, a German company. Mm-hmm. And they had the fastest technology for MIDI conversion. But I didn't dig the sounds that was in their unit. So I was trying to use the Axon with Roland sounds, and I just was having all kinds of glitches and troubles, and I'd be playing a C chord and having a sharp 9 flat 5 come out. You know? It was pretty hellish until I went all Roland, which was slower but a lot more reliable. So I, at that time, I mean, this was maybe 12 years ago now, I had a Roland, what is it, a MIDI converter box. I can't remember the name of it. And then 1080s for sounds. Mm-hmm. And I would combine sounds. So I had two 1080s plus a spare, which I needed because things broke right and left. But I would often combine sounds, and my setup was just ridiculous. I had, just for guitar, I had a MIDI switcher, a wah pedal, a whammy pedal, a volume pedal. And then for the keyboards, I had two different volumes controlling, each one controlling the different sound modules, plus a MIDI switcher for that. So I was doing some tap dancing.
Well, I know from my own experience, when you use synths live, it's a lot different than when you use it in the studio to get them, especially if you're using a subtle sound to cut through, or vice versa, you get something that just fills everything. And what were the difficulties that you encountered in terms of, did you have to change what you did on the studio album a little bit to get it to work live, or was it pretty much the same?
What you have to do is really learn what each sound will do. For instance, if you're playing strings, there's going to be a delay before they come out. Mm-hmm. And then trumpets, well, with guitar synth anyway, there's going to be a delay because there's a MIDI conversion. And for instance, on a song called Savoy, I played a little horn solo, and I always had to be right on top of the beat so that the sounds would come out properly. Mm-hmm. So it was a real challenge. And I played with them for 3 years over two records, so there was a lot of different sounds. And at one point I played a flute solo. I remember this Irish tune that he did. And it was so frustrating because, you know, when you have a pitch wheel, when you're trying to bend, it's not the same as guitar, where guitar you can bend and choke it, you know, bend up and stop it, or bend down and stop it. Mm-hmm. With the synth, you bend and the bend is going to come back.
That's true. I forgot about that.
I did what I could, but it was a lot stiffer than if I had played guitar there.
Have you tried the Roland VG series? Because a lot of people like that pickup, that they say it tracks pretty well. Have you tried that, or you still think there's too much lag?
No, I haven't tried anything since the Beck days, because I've been on my own since then. And with airline regulations, I just stopped using the synth altogether. And mm-hmm. I'm gearing up to start up again, because now the Fishman Triple Play, mm-hmm. it's a wireless MIDI thing. And when I do my solo shows, I do a multimedia show with film. So I take laptops with me anyway. Mm-hmm. And with the Fishman, you can trigger sounds that are in your computer, so I don't have to bring any extra hardware like I did back in the day. Mm-hmm. So I imagine the next couple of years I'll get synth back in it.
Have you been using more of the virtual guitar effects now that are in the laptop, or do you still use amps and effects?
You know, I wanted so badly to love some program, and I spent a lot of time with Guitar Rig, with Pod Farm, with Amplitube, because you have to learn them in order to decide that you don't like them. So that was really frustrating. I had the highest hopes that, and my biggest motivation was that I get nailed so much money for excess luggage that, you know, I really wanted it to work. And I got one of those soft step pedals, which weighs like under 2 pounds, mm-hmm. that could have been the controller. But I just never, I never found any program that was up to par. Mm-hmm. So it's really frustrating. I mean, there's some great sounds in each program, but not in any one program.
Right.
Because I, you know, after having been with Digitech for 20 years, I have some pretty specific things that I really require. I got to have a great whammy pedal that's reliable and doesn't glitch. And especially with the Digitech new RP1000, they've made some incredible sound improvements. One is the talker, that it sounds just like a talk box, but you work it with your foot. So because I usually do instrumental music, mm-hmm. I have all those different colors available to me. And I just haven't found that in a computer program.
Mm-hmm. Hold on. We got a caller. Let's ask them to come on. Can you turn your radio down?
Hang on.
Oh, there we go. This is the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Do you have a question for Jennifer?
It's Monique.
Hey, Monique. How you doing?
Good. I had a minute, so if you wanted me to say hello and maybe ask a question, I thought I'd give a call.
Do you have a question for her?
Yeah, why not?
Go ahead.
Hey, Jennifer, it's Monique.
Hey, thanks for the hookup, madam.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. I'm just sorry I couldn't be down there with the boys. Is Scott even in the room? He's not saying a word.
I'm here.
Hey, I know we're talking techy. We got a lot of tech talk going on, but for Jennifer, being a woman, and for me, being a woman and a mom, I had a little question. How do you think we can get these little girls playing? Tell us about your instructional series that you have going on and what you recommend to inspire these up-and-comings that are just sitting in front of video games nowadays.
Boy, that's a tough one. That's a really tough one. I actually am conjuring something up in my head with a specific company to try to do that exact same thing. And when I was with Washburn, I was trying to get them interested in focusing on getting more girls to play. And in fact, the numbers are up. There's a lot more girls playing guitar now. For whatever reason, boy, I mean, back in the day when I was with Michael Jackson, I thought the revolution was happening. You know, Wendy and Lisa was with Prince, and there was a female in Billy Idol's band, and that was heavy rotation on MTV. I thought that was really going to be a big change, but it really didn't happen. And
right.
It's not happening till now. It's the influence of major players. I think like Orianthe is out with Alice Cooper now and probably influencing the best people. And then YouTube. There's tons of young girls just kicking ass on YouTube now.
That's true. I still don't feel like we see enough of them. But
I think it's going to take somebody that's on the level of a Van Halen. That I mean, when he was in his prime, he just revolutionized guitar sales. You know, all of a sudden everybody wanted to be Van Halen and started wearing their hair like him and getting whammy bars and everything. I think it's going to have to happen with a woman to get girls really interested in running out and getting guitars.
That's true. Also,
right.
It's not just instrumental. It's going to have to be some pop star with a female guitar player.
Do you think there's enough women guitar players out there playing live? I mean, from my background, okay, I'm a guy, so I mean, when I used to go to the concerts, there were a lot of concerts, so we got to see a lot of people. Now, I don't go out as much on concerts. I don't get to go as much, but do you think there's enough exposure for artists that would, you know, so that the younger kids could see, both male and female, could see, you know, these different guitar players?
Well, I think the mass exposure is on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kids that can't go out to bars, especially under 21, they're just living on YouTube and absorbing enormous amounts of material and knowledge without leaving their bedrooms, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm telling you, I could have been a lot more dangerous if I had YouTube when I was learning.
Same with me.
Yeah, it's amazing how much you can see. Speaking of your videos, there's two of them. It's called Rock Sauce. And for rhythm and lead playing, can you tell us a little bit about those and what would you recommend? Is that for the very beginner or for a moderate player or, you know?
I'd say moderate. What I wanted to focus on, there are so many lessons out there about scales and patterns and arpeggios and chords. I didn't want to get into repeating something that's already been done. So my focus is on how to make it fun. The creativity of mm-hmm. taking rhythm guitar, for instance, and really thinking outside of the box. If you're a strummer, there's all kinds of other things you can do by adding harmonics or tapping or finger picking. And I especially had fun with the Rock Sauce for Solo Guitar because it dealt with techniques to have in your bag of tricks to really make your solos come alive.
Mm-hmm.
Not just solos, but melodies. You know, I mean, the very basic thing is just playing a series of notes. But when you start adding nuances and tremolo bar, whammy pedal, slide, tapping, hammers, pulls, and really subtle things, that's the fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's the stuff that I live for when I play. When I'm learning a tune, you know, it'll start with the notes, and then I'd think about how can I take it to the next level emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all in the sauce.
Mm-hmm. Now you can check this out on her website. They have there's a store on there where you can see, besides your albums, you can see the videos. We're almost at the end of the show. What's coming up with you? Is there a new album in the works? You just mentioned that you were going to do a new instructional video. Where are you going to be playing? Can you give us some information on that?
You know, my thought as of late is I have no desire to put out a new record because everybody can steal the music, and it's like a hobby when you pay mass amounts of money to make something happen and don't see a return.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just the state of what's going on now. Everybody downloads stuff for free, and I can't afford to put 10, 15 grand into a record and not see any return. So what I'm doing now is focusing on the lessons and shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing a lot of work in Europe. I'm going back. I just came back from several weeks in Italy, and I'm going back all over Europe for the month of May. And I'm working on doing different shows. I have my solo multimedia show that I've been doing for 8 years now, where I play in sync with films that I make.
Mm-hmm.
And I continue to grow with that and do more films, more tunes, medleys of this and that. And that's an easy thing to book. It's just me. You can put me on a plane, send me anywhere. And I'm also playing with a lot of different bands. There's a new band I'm going to be playing with in Poland for a couple of weeks coming up in May. And I just recently premiered a show locally in Portland that's all Jeff Beck music, because I'm a freak for his music. I love it. So, and I'm looking into doing like a Beck Page Clapton triple show here in town. There's a friend of mine that's in a Led Zeppelin tribute, and another guy, Robbie Laws, is going to be doing the Clapton thing. So just thinking of different fun things to do to mix it up and keep things fresh. And I also did premiered a Michael Jackson show in town that's really different. There's a lot of tributes out there doing copies of his shows. And what I did was I made films for a whole bunch of tunes. Like I've got old black and white murder mystery film for Smooth Criminal and zombie film for Thriller. And I have the tracks with the film, and then I added three singers and three live horns.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really different kind of show. So that's another thing I'm throwing out there as well.
I presume that you're going to release those like on a DVD or something, or will they be on YouTube?
I have no plans to do either, actually.
Oh, okay.
I mean, especially to put Michael Jackson tunes out there, the legal thing is just a big mess. So I think it's
that's true.
Yeah.
No, it'd be great to see it. I mean, it's unfortunately I'm down here, but in Los Angeles. But it would be great. It's very interesting, especially your multimedia show too. But we're at the end of the show, and obviously we just scratched the surface on all about you, and you just have to come back. We're going to have you back when we get a chance. I just want to mention it's www.jenniferbatten.com. Check it out. Her videos are there, the instructional videos, her albums that are out there. Check out these two albums that I was playing, Whatever and Momentum. They're just, there's so many things that she's doing on there. It's just a potpourri of just technique and sounds and just taste. I think you guys will really like that. I will take us out with a cut from your album. It's called Swarm, and it's some really good, just kick-ass guitar. Yep. So,
and then just to mention real quick, next week's guest will be John Holt from Kemper Profiling Amps.
That should be fun. Okay.
Right on. Thanks for coming on, Jennifer. You rock.
Thanks. Hang on the line till we're off the air. I'll talk to you guys in a second. But everybody have a great week, and we will see you next week. And this is Swarm, and this song is from the Momentum album.